Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Loud and Local continues on The Rock with Kevin Deers, 99.9 KISW.
Hey, what's going on? It's Loud and Local Stay Home Sessions, and right now I'm talking with the author of a book called Rusted Metal, A Guide to Heavy Metal and Hard Rock Music in the Pacific Northwest, 1970 to 1995. It is available now. We're all booksellers. You can go to Amazon.com, or you can get it from a smaller company, or we'll get into it with what's the best place to purchase it to help support the project. But the author's James Beach. How's it going, man?
Good. Good, Kevin. Hanging in there. Yeah. It's crazy times, definitely.
Absolutely. What a year. How before we get into the book, really, like, how have you been staying sane and safe for the last nine months?
Well, I work out of my house mostly. Mm-hmm. I not only do the music stuff with the label and the book, and, yep, we're working on other things, but I work for a friend of mine who's a book publisher down in Portland that took over his dad's business a few years ago in a different field that I used to work a lot more in, the horror fiction field.
Oh, cool.
And, that's turned into a regular, part-time, three-quarter-time sort of gig with him.
Yeah.
And doing a lot of the same stuff. I work on fulfillment and do sales and some marketing and customer service and different things, just kind of helping him. And so I work a lot out of the house. He's got a little office down there in Portland, so, I'd go down once every other week or whatever kind of thing. But so fortunately I already was one of those kind of sort of lucky people, I guess, that already worked out of my house.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't a huge effect there. I just missed some of the events we did a lot, record shows and different ways we kind of promoted what we were doing.
Yeah.
And I miss seeing people. I like hanging out with friends and stuff and going to shows and not being able to see the concert. We were going to a lot of concerts, mm-hmm, locally, and involved helping out in different ones and stuff and putting on a couple of our own, as, mm-hmm, with the Metal Fest, and just having that all shut down's been, that's really been the toughest, is just missing seeing a lot of great bands and being able to get out there and get this in front of people. So we're just kind of doing what we can do behind the scenes, working and fulfilling orders and trying to spread the word. And we've got some tentative plans next year, starting in the spring, to have some sort of signing, if it's okay by that point, and have some pop-up tents at Georgetown Records and Fantagraphics there. Been down for hosting it for a long time, and they're definitely still down for doing it if we can keep it safe for everybody. So,
oh, and you can count Loud and Local and Metal Shop in to co-host to promote, so.
Yeah, if you guys want to come down and hang out and be part of it, that would be awesome, so.
Hell yeah. So, let's talk about the book, but before we do, you were mentioning the label. So not only did you write this awesome book, but you do Northwest Metal Works. How's things been going with the label?
That's true. Yeah, it's going really well. We've done 7 records, mm-hmm. and we've got 2 more coming that we just announced a little while ago. We've done records with Heir Apparent, DKO, yes. and Overlord, and a couple Oregon bands, Whiskey Stick and Cruella. We've done a couple fun compilations, and the last one we did was a Lake Hills compilation with a bunch of bands that played there in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s. And we're doing the second Heir Apparent record as a reissue, and then we're doing Slaughterhouse 5, who played our Metal Fest last year in 2019 there in Seattle. And they just had a little single that they put out themselves in a compilation track, and unfortunately never got more out there, even though they had a demo tape and some other recordings. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be their first album, and those guys just... That was their first reunion show. They just killed it. They were so good, and they're interested in doing more shows if it can happen down the road. So we're excited about those too. We got a couple other potentials down the road that we're sort of kicking around, seeing what might come of it. But now it's the weirdest thing, because we started one of my main co-writers, Brian Nairn, and mm-hmm. I actually had 3 on this book, co-writers, co-contributors, Brian Nairn, who's a grew up in Tacoma and still lives there in Puyallup. And, Jim Sutton was one of my other co-writers, and he's originally a Spokane guy and lives on the east side now. And then James Tolan, who's a local guy in Kirkland. And grew up there and went to many, many shows over the years. And I know you know James pretty well.
Yeah, too. I had James in studio with the band Palooka one time. And he was the first one who really got this project of Rusted Metal on my radar. So you can thank James for that.
Yeah, James got involved. Brian and I got together on starting the project. And Jim Sutton and James both got involved. And everybody helped out so much with this project. And James, you know, he knew everybody. Still, everybody likes James a lot, and he went to so many shows and knew where everything was and knew everybody. And so he helped a lot with connections, and he's a huge archivist and had a lot of, we all had a lot of stuff we saved and collected and so forth over the years from different shows, and you know, music collectors we are too, and fans. And so we had a lot of the materials for the book as far as images and different things and information already in our possession. And so that helped a lot with it. And those guys were immensely helpful, all 3 of them, you know, from going up there and letting me crash at their places to taking us around to different places and meeting people. And so it really became a collaborative project. And we had a couple other local guys that were in bands or worked in the scene in various ways, wrote some things for the book, and so many people were cooperative with interviews, and it just really blossomed. But the weird thing was the label spawned out of the book, and we had some bands that were interested in, you know, anybody that wanted to put out, you know, their music or reissue their album or whatever, and it was something Brian and I had always loved records, and was like, well, maybe we could do this. So we thought, well, you know what the heck? It might be an interesting way to kind of combine the two together and help promote some great bands that are kind of overlooked. And you know, a lot of these guys, even with the anniversary ones, those guys only ever had, you know, European releases of those couple records that we did so far. And they just didn't get a lot of sales and exposure over here and distribution. And then a lot of the other things, the guys just had, you know, a comp track or some, you know, single or whatever kind of thing, and didn't have anything out there really as far as a record. And so, or in the Overlord case, you know, they did have an EP and a compilation track, and in that case we expanded it to be a full length with some unreleased stuff. So we've done some different things, and everything we do is Northwest hard rock and heavy metal stuff. So we kind of keep in that same, that's our focus with the book. And so the record label, we make sure that ties in with that, and the concert events tie in with that. And yeah, it's a kind of a nice little umbrella or whatever of this genre. And you know, the historical stuff is great. You know, a lot of people were in bands and got a lot of experience that way and have fond memories. And so it's really kind of a neat thing for them, you know, and with many of the bands. I mean, obviously there's the bigger ones in there like a Queensryche or Sanctuary or somebody that a lot of people know.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of small bands people have probably never, you know, heard of outside of the people that played in the band and went to the battles or whatever. And so it kind of gives everybody a chance to, you know, have their name in there and be part of the history.
Because they were there. And they were, yeah, they were a building block of it. Now, let's, before we go too into the weeds with some of the smaller bands, with some of that kind of stuff, I want to, let's go back to, like, the idea. Like, what gave you the crazy idea to do this? Because I can imagine there are many sleepless nights. This is quite the undertaking. This is not some pamphlet. This is not some 100-page, you know, glossy magazine kind of thing. This is, like, 800 pages. Is that right?
902.
Jesus Christ.
So.
I got to admit, I don't have a copy yet. I still need to order my copy.
We need to get you one, definitely. It's, you know, it was the idea. I published a magazine in the horror fiction field for a while. We expanded to media. I did it for about 10 years, and then I sold the magazine. And that's really was a lot of my big start into the writing and editing and publishing world that way. And I did books as well. And about the last three, maybe 5 years of them, maybe not that much, 4 years, we started doing special issues where they would have a certain topic. And a couple of the issues I did, like a horror and rock kind of special.
Mm-hmm.
And I always kind of thought about doing a music magazine or a horror magazine when I was younger, and when I broke into the publishing world, I thought, well, you know, there's a need for the fiction side. But I always sort of had that other love, that the music thing, and I wanted to, as I started dabbling, I was writing a couple articles for other people. It's like, I'd really like to do a book on this. And I, with anything, if you don't really have, like, your angle or your experience or whatever, it's just not going to be that good of an end result, because it's kind of like writing a novel and you know nothing about any of the experiences in there. It just comes across as phony. And I thought, you know, what would be my thing would be, you know, something in maybe this area, because this is where I grow up. You know, I grew up in Portland. My parents are from Seattle, and my grandparents were up there, and we'd travel up there a lot over the years. And so I went to Easy Street, and I went to some shows up there, and I went to various record stores and so on. And I read The Rocket, every copy I could get my hands on, and eventually they started having it in Portland, you know. And so I always just kind of followed the scene, and I liked a lot of the bands in the Northwest in general. So this book just made sense. It's like I was like, you know, nobody's done this. People have done books on, of course, the bigger bands and the grunge scene and that sort of thing, and punk. Nobody's really focused on the heavy metal stuff. And there were so many bands, you know, so many people, and not just during kind of the high points or the hot periods. There was just in general, overall, there was always some bands kind of dabbling in that type of heavier music. And it just seemed like a need for it. And Brian, I knew, you know, Brian, I met many years ago in about 1990. I think we first met at record collector shows.
Okay.
And that we were always friends from that. And he had a store for a while in Tacoma and did a record show there. And we just stayed in touch. We liked a lot of the same music. And Brian turned me on to a lot of the stuff up north and like, oh, this band, this and this band, that. He always had tons of Queensryche stuff, and he's done like archives for him and stuff. So he was always like the guy. And, you know, and I followed this stuff over the years as I, you know, when I was younger, and Queensryche and Rail and Wild Dogs and whoever were coming out, they played that stuff on the radio in Portland too. And we knew who they were, and we'd buy the records and so on. And so I just always had a love for it, and this book just made a lot of sense. And we knew a lot of the bands. We thought we knew a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And going into this with all the research, and we just discovered so many more. And I planned to make this book span from 1970 to now, but it was just no way it was ever going to. It started to become so huge as it was with just doing 25-year span that it was like, no, we got to cut it off. And I ended up extending it to 95 instead of 1990 that I'd originally thought, because it really showed the arc of the music scene kind of changing, and a lot of bands couldn't get as many gigs, or they lost their record deals or whatever kind of thing and split up. And it just showed this arc of kind of the innocence of the impact of the early, you know, proto metal hard rock bands of the early 70s mm-hmm. and late 60s kind of influencing these guys with, you know, Led Zeppelin, Grand Funk, Black Sabbath, whatever, on through to like the new wave of British heavy metal and yep. European metal sort of influence of the early 80s and on through the 90s when like the alternative stuff kind of, you know, a lot of the crossover type of stuff took over, and then mm-hmm. of course grunge became very popular, and this, you know, labels just weren't signing the metal bands anymore. Yeah. And if you were already signed and you were big, then you kind of survived it, but a lot of them did not. And so it really showed when we started to see, wow, there just wasn't a lot of gigs for metal bands, or even a lot of metal bands by 1995. So,
and if you would have continued on, like, it would have been like an exercise in like subgenres, because you would have had to go deep into like the like
huge,
every extreme metal underground subgenre. That would just be like another book in and of itself. Uh-huh. So, it's
what they just called crossover in the 80s became, you know, a number of subgenres.
Exactly.
So you're exactly right. It kind of, as metal evolved and to what it is now, there's all kinds of different, you know, and terms are different too. Mm-hmm. And that was why we ended up combining hard rock and heavy metal, because in the 70s, there was a lot of hard bands we'd probably call hard rock now, like Hard or Van Halen or whatever, they called metal.
Yeah.
And is Kiss really metal? Is it, you know, so it's like, the definitions kind of changed and evolved. And then, you know, as you had the split where there was early 80s was just metal, anybody that kind of did heavy metal was heavy metal. It, by the time Metallica and these things started happening and the crossover kind of stuff, there was the thrash and, you know, crossover guys, or there was the hair metal or, you know, glam metal guys or whatever kind of thing. And, you know, it just kind of evolved into these different areas. And then, you know, 90s, of course, you had industrial and different other mm-hmm. things, that funk and different things that came into the crossover stuff, and the scene evolved. And so it was a conscious thing to put that stuff in there. And the other big change of the book was that it started out as more of kind of a narrative type book. And as we were working on it, and I got more and more into it, and I realized that it just didn't work that way. And there was a couple different reasons. One is it just became hugely redundant.
Okay.
As there was a lot of the same information in different areas. There was just too much overkill, and it just ended up working so much better as a big reference guide, because then we could have the band bios mixed in some interviews throughout the book, and then it would have, you know, discography and concert listings and studios and so on. And so it's broken down that way, with about two-thirds of the book is the bios. There's about 622 bands.
Jesus Christ.
Bios in the book. So we had about 90 or so interviews total with different people in the... And, of course, it covers Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and even through in Vancouver, BC, just because it was kind of on the I-5 circuit and a lot of crossover type stuff around the border. So we included them. And so, so it's a pretty big doorstop, basically.
So if you had to just throw a ballpark in there, how many hours do you think are represented in this book of your life?
Thousands. I mean, it took 5 years to write and compile the thing.
Yeah.
And do interviews and travel. There's a lot of travel, and, you know, my wife has been hugely supportive of me being gone a lot more. I mean, I've done enough of the weekend sort of stuff for events and things. It wasn't, mm-hmm. you know, new, but there was more definite overnights going up to Seattle or down to Portland or whatever. So, so it was a lot of work. A lot of it was a lot of research. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, there's some stuff out there about many of the bands, and then there was other ones there was nothing about anybody at all. And, you know, a lot of it was contacting people. And, you know, thank God for social media and stuff, because I never would have, and the internet, because I never, this would have taken twice as long to do the book, so easily, if there was not that type of, you know, I look at something like Loser that was done in the early 90s by Clark Humphrey, which is a great book for its time, and to think of how much he, you know, probably how long it took him just to do that book, which was, you know, much smaller of a book than mine, and yet with no internet at the time.
Oh,
no
my God,
way.
Yeah.
You know, he just had to talk to everybody he knew and use the rocket and any other thing. So I'm really grateful there was that. I think that did help a lot. But it was a huge amount of work, and it took another year and a half to even edit the thing and get it laid out right and fix all the errors and try to correct as many mistakes as we could find and fix. And yeah, it was a lot of work. I had it was started to think at some point it'd probably never be done.
Well, I mean, it's a true testament to like your heavy metal work ethic, you know, getting it out there. And also, like, so was this done before the lockdown, or did you get a lot of work done toward the end?
No, it was done last year.
Okay.
And we did a special little, like, we'd had it up for pre-order on our website, kind of as a soft pre-order.
Okay.
And I probably put it up too early, but when we launched the record label, we just went ahead and put it up there too. And we didn't have a whole lot of people buy it, you know, over that time. It was more as we, you know, hey, this thing's just about done, and, you know, we're looking at, you know, however many months of editing this thing. And it just took twice as long to edit and correct everything. And it just took stages of that to get to where we had it, and working with the designer on it hand in hand.
Yeah.
It was just so much.
Yeah. 900 pages, man. That's, I mean, and there's just so much stuff you have to compile with, like, so, I mean, there's, I'm sure there's stuff you probably even left out that you know, which is crazy to think that 900 pages, but to someone who's looking out, you know, someone who's not from the Northwest, there's such a rich history of the early 90s grunge, punk, alternative indie scene. And that is so well documented. And I've read many of those books and seen the hype and all these things. But if you were from out of the town and you moved to Seattle, you would have no idea about this other scene. You know, you would hear the bands like Metal Church or Queensryche and Sanctuary, but maybe you would think, oh, those bands are kind of on an island of in and of itself. But there was such a rich scene that really brought those bands to the highest point. It's really awesome that you now have this living document out there, because it is cool that there's things online here and there, and people can research if they find it. But it's so much different to have this document that, you know, people could find at a used bookstore in 5 years. And that kid who is just now getting into this stuff will know where they came from. I think it's really awesome. And I thank you for that, man.
Well, thank you. Yeah. It's, you know, it's my pleasure. I mean, this was, it was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it was something I'm really grateful of so much support for this, because so many people were so cooperative with giving us their time for interviews and or sending us images or giving us information. And there's so many more people that even, you know, I didn't necessarily interview them, or maybe that didn't work out or whatever, but they still helped with information on their band and maybe other people's bands or, you know, whatever. And there was just so many people out there that were excited about this happening. And you know, definitely couldn't have done it without, so, you know, because there was just so many shaken trees to, you know, is this right with these people in this band? And, you know, did you know this person? And, you know, was this right for your band? And even then, of course, there's still been a few people that have come out of the woodwork already and said, oh, this is the wrong guy in my band. I'm like, well, you know, we tried to get everybody. But, you know, that's why you do a revised edition down the road kind of thing.
Absolutely. When you were reaching out to anyone, I'm curious, was anyone hesitant to kind of go back in memory lane? Or was everyone pretty stoked and on board?
There was some, and I think it's hard to say with some of it. And then there's other people I talked to later on and got to know that they just didn't know who I was or who we were. And, you know, some people also, there's some bad memories to do with their mm-hmm. time in certain bands, and sure. they just, you know, they would kind of say, yeah, I'll talk, and then they just didn't, yeah. you know, decided to kind of shy away from it, and for whatever reason, and there was, you know, mostly everybody, we had a couple bigger bands, management turn us down, I'll just leave them on.
Yeah.
It wasn't that important to have them do an interview because they've done tons of them and everybody knows who they are, and it was easy to write a bio on them because there was enough information.
Sure.
I knew enough.
Yeah.
So it wasn't hugely important. Weirdly enough, we had a couple interests from a couple of the Queensryche guys, but it just never panned out to get a sit down with one of them mm-hmm. for various reasons. But yet we had a great interview with their first manager, Kim Harris.
Cool.
You know, we talked to him for like 3 hours. And so as forthcoming and honest as he was in this interview, it was kind of like, well, do we need?
Yeah.
and we had a couple other people that were in, you know, Randy Gane and Myth and this sort of thing. So yeah. it was like, well, maybe we don't really need them that bad because everybody kind of knows enough as it is. It's pretty in depth with stuff about them in there
yeah.
too. But a lot of people were great. And you know, whether it was catching somebody backstage before a show and try to sit down with them or whatever we did, there was definitely a lot of cooperation and it was pretty fun. It was fun because in some ways it was kind of reliving some of my youth, and
yeah.
I got to see bands even reform, and you know, some around releases we did and some around this book and some around stuff they were doing themselves, and to see bands I never saw.
Yeah.
You know, I was a little too young to catch some of the bands, you know, like TKO or whoever back in the day, and to see them a few times or whatever now, that's you know, that's been just really wonderful. That's been super fun, and so it's kind of nice for that too. And it's just really interesting to see how many musicians and bands were still out there playing and viable and doing either their own thing or reuniting and doing new music or playing shows or both. So that's something we touched on in the book too, to kind of what are people doing now sort of thing in the bios to see that. And so people have definitely commented that they thought that was pretty cool, that the dots were all connected with bands and what musicians did of other bands and other yeah. things they went on to. So
I think it's pretty cool. It's just kind of coincidental that 2021 is actually going to be 50 years of KISW, and it kind of coincides.
Yeah, I know.
Coincides with the release of this book, which is such a rich document history of the Pacific Northwest heavy metal and hard rock scene. And something that I wanted to comment on, at least, and it's not even really a question, but just kind of point out how cool it is to, you know, maybe a kid in Bellevue that is growing up there thinking, oh man, this is such a lame town and Seattle's where it's at. If they read this book, they're like, wait a second, this was like the mecca for like hard rock and heavy metal back in that time.
Yeah.
The East Side.
It's an interesting thing to think of the stuff that went on in the suburbs.
Yeah.
There. And part of that was a big circuit too, is they had, you know, Craig Cook started booking shows there, you know, Unicam and some of the other, booking, you know, agencies were doing a lot of stuff there over
yeah.
the years. And he came on doing Book and Rail and other bands in the mid-70s. And when they kind of went away from the music a bit more, focused on the roller skating, they went back to it again, and he brought in the Battle of the Bands. And
exactly.
The first one they had in 79 was all hard rock metal bands.
Yeah.
And a lot of those members of those bands, all, you know, many of them went on to be in different bands later on. You know, you had guys from Queensryche in a couple different bands.
Mm-hmm.
You had the guys from Fifth Angel and Ridge. You had, you know, guys from TKO that, you know, that ended up in TKO in
yeah.
Tyrant, you know, and Q5. And, you know, all these different bands that came out of this, and many, many other ones. I mean, you know, Lenny from Sanctuary played in one of the Battle of the Bands.
And, that's awesome.
You know, just a bunch of other people that went on to other things. So, you know, some more significant than others, but a lot of people, that was kind of the training ground. And there was a circuit within the roller rink.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. In Portland, we had a couple all ages clubs.
Yeah.
And so we didn't have, there was a little bit of that with the bars and, you know, all that sort of thing too. But there was, with a lot of the heavy metal stuff was kind of focused on like Starry Night or Pine Street. And there, you know, there was a few other ones here and there that kind of popped up and didn't last too long. But those were kind of the main ones. And so I never really knew that there was so much trouble up north with a lot of the, you know, age limitations they started in
teen dance ordinance and stuff, yeah,
and things like that that kind of killed a lot of the all ages stuff. So, so it's just kind of interesting to see, and that was something that was kind of interesting too, was how sometimes politics affected, you know, and things that happened in society affected. You know, they had record label representations up of major labels in the 70s in Seattle, and by the time they changed the laws and, you know, took away some of the writing off of loss and this sort of thing, they didn't put the risk into that. And that changed a lot of how they signed bands, too, in the 80s. So they'd give you a record to prove yourself or two, and then you were gone if you didn't. Whereas before that, you could have a 7-album deal like a Yes or whoever and really develop as a band. And so there's just a lot of those things that are kind of interesting how they affected it. And the indie thing coming when there wasn't any record labels looking at Seattle or Portland, and people just did their own things, you know.
Yeah.
I can make tapes and I can press up vinyl, and or this indie label wants to sign us, or that one, and you know, it, or you'd go down to LA and try to make it down there. And the difference was eventually, it, you know, people were starting to sniff around and say, there's stuff happening up here in Seattle.
Yeah.
And so on.
Because they did it themselves. Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Necessity. I'm curious about if we wanted to, and you know, I know it's available on Amazon and whatnot, but is there a different place that you would suggest, you know, like a smaller company or maybe your own website? That
we do have our own website.
Yeah.
It's northwestmetalworksmusic.com, and copies of the paperback are available there. We had a signed slipcase hardcover that's almost done that we did in the campaign that was an exclusive, which we were basically sold out, but we did end up with a couple extras. So if anybody kind of wants to reach out, we had like a little waiting list. We were kind of, you know, put together sort of thing. So we probably have a couple extras as it turns out, if anybody wants those. And we have ebooks available too.
Yeah.
And that's where also we have some of our record label releases and stuff too that are still in stock. So yeah, and then Amazon's, they're available there.
Yep.
We've got some distribution there and various stores, Silver Platters.
Oh, cool.
Georgetown, yeah, a couple different places are carrying them up there. Zion's Gate.
Oh, nice.
A lot of the great stores up there, and some down in Portland like Music Millennium in Mississippi are carrying them, and few around the rest of the world. So
cool. Well, yeah, you can get it directly from you guys at northwestmetalworks.com. You know, my last question for you, man, I don't want to have you all night. It's not that late, but still, I'm curious. We all know the heavy hitters, but from your perspective, looking back, what are some of your favorites? Just a couple, like maybe a handful of your favorites that never really got that shine that you get to kind of expose in the book.
Well, I have a few, but there's a couple, you know, Overlord I mentioned was really great band. I never got to see them, unfortunately, but I always liked that record and that track that was on the Northwest Metal Fest. And so that was a real pleasure to be able to put out an expanded reissue of their record. I thought those guys were great. They were really, and, you know, they never have got the credit to being like an early predecessor to the so-called grunge scene. I mean, those guys fully had a punky singer singing in a hard rock metal band.
Yeah.
Twin lead guitars and double bass drums, and they had like street type songs, you know, really gritty type, you know, almost gang like type stuff, and they were just really ahead of their time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a few people have recognized them, but they just broke up too soon before like Gorilla Gardens happened.
Okay.
Green River came out and Soundgarden and things like that.
They
were just a little bit ahead of the curve. Shadow was another great band Mike McCready of Pearl Jam and the Friel Brothers, and those guys were great.
Nice.
More of a metal thing,
yeah.
Like almost like Iron Maiden, early Def Leppard type vibe, but
yeah.
Also kind of a punky singer. You know, so those guys were great. I mean, there's a lot of great bands, Panic, and just a lot of,
mm-hmm.
you know, Bitter End. A lot of them that maybe got a record out, but they just didn't quite get to that next level. And, you know, it was an indie release on Metal Blade or whatever. There was a couple bands I really loved in Portland. One actually has a reissue coming out now that was one of my favorite bands I saw a handful of times was a band called Gargoyle.
Okay.
And they were, a lot of people call them either Portland's Queensryche or Portland's Iron Maiden. They're very power metal with kind of a little bit of prog type elements, very much like early kind of Fates Warning, early Queensryche type of vibe. And they recorded up at Triad with Mike Tortorello at the helm. And they had a record on New Renaissance. I always liked it. Those guys were great live. And they've got a reissue coming out. And I actually wrote the liner notes for them. So I'm kind of excited about that. So that's coming out on a Greek label, Cold Metal Classics, and so that's pretty cool. There was a few great bands. Glacier was a really cool band in Portland, and the Wild Dogs, they were pretty cool.
Absolutely.
Band that I liked a lot that I got to see back in the day, and they did a reunion show for us up at the Metal Fest at El Corazon, first one we did.
Glacier played that,
and
too.
So there was a lot of good bands. I think, you know, obviously Metal Church and Queensryche and a few of those other ones kind of are more known around the world. But I think in the underground metal scene, a lot of people, if they had a record or CD release, a lot of times people have vibed into them.
Yeah.
And I think that's the cool thing with a lot of that. You know, you have a lot of bands, too, that, you know, maybe they only ever had a compilation track or something, but they had some sort of following. And you know, like I said, there's quite a, I mean, I like too many things is usually my problem. So it's hard to pick a lot of them. And then, of course, you know, you overlook other ones that you're like, oh, I forgot about that band. But there was a lot of great stuff. I was fortunate to see a lot of good shows in Portland. I saw a couple things up there at like Off Ramp and Rock Candy.
Yeah.
You know, Forced Entry. I saw those guys were great.
And, so killer.
You know, Wehrmacht in Portland was really cool. I saw those guys a few times and hung out with them at a couple of parties and stuff. And Poison Idea was a great band. Those guys, Jerry A. and Tom Pig, those guys were great. And they kind of evolved into a crossover thing when the guys from Mayhem joined them and kind of fused more metal into that punk.
Yeah.
And, you know, I saw a lot of shows with those guys and the Accused. And, you know, that's a lot of stuff that was definitely happening when I started going to the club shows in like 86. Before that, I just went to a lot of the arena stuff of Ozzy or Scorpions or whatever kind of thing. But yeah, there was a lot of great club shows, and there still is. It's just, you know, maybe not right now, obviously, but yeah.
There will be again.
I'm sure we'll be back to that soon enough.
And if you heard any of those names, you know, that James just rattled off and you're like, man, I want to find out, now is the time. You can get this book, Rusted Metal, A Guide to Heavy Metal and Hard Rock Music in the Pacific Northwest, 1970 to 1995. See what I did there, James? That's called segue. That's called product placement. Yeah, exactly. So
there you go. Thank you, sir.
Absolutely, man. So, yeah, pick up the book, northwestmetalworks.com. Is there any final words you want to say for the Northwest Heavy Metal Rock community?
Well, like I said, we got a couple records coming out. We appreciate everybody's support, and then I'll tease you with something. Hopefully we'll come back and talk about very soon here. We haven't quite dropped it yet, but we have about 80,000 words done on a single band bio that's set to come out next year, and the way we're going, I think it will probably happen. So maybe we can come back and talk about that sometime soon down the road here.
Right on, man. Well, thanks very much, man.
All right. Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Whatever happens today, plan to conquer it with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. True North Convenience Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. Our brew is truly perfect for any time of the day. During October and November, enter for a chance to win free coffee for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or find the mobile app in your favorite app store. Offer valid 10-7 through 12-1. True Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.